It was long after dark. The tram car rode between stars and ice. The group sat in silence, the only sound the creak of cable. After a time had passed, Lenore Hoyt said to Braun Lamia, "You also carry the cruciform." Lamia looked at the priest. Colonel Cassad leaned toward the woman.
"Do you think Hetmes Dean was the Templar who had spoken to Johnny?"
"Possibly. I never found out."
Cassad did not blink.
"Were you the one who killed Miss Dean?"
"No."
Martin Silenus stretched and yawned.
"We have a few hours before sunrise. Anyone else interested in getting some sleep?"
Several heads nodded.
"I'll stay up to keep watch,"
said Fedmon Cassad.
"I'm not tired."
"I'll keep you company," said the consul.
"I'll heat some coffee for the therm."
When the others slept, the infant Rachel making soft cooing sounds in her sleep, the other three sat at the windows and watched the stars burn cold and distant in the high night. 6. Kronos Keep jutted from the easternmost rim of the great Bridal Range. A grim, baroque heap of sweating stones, with 300 rooms and halls. A maze of lightless corridors leading to deep halls, towers, turrets, balconies overlooking the northern moors, air shafts rising half a kilometer to light and rumored to drop to the world's labyrinth itself. Parapets scoured by cold winds from the peaks above, stairways, inside and out, carved from a mountain stone and leading nowhere, stained glass windows 100 meters tall, set to catch the first rays of solstice sun or the moon on midwinter night, paneless windows the size of a man's fist, looking out on nothing in particular, an endless array of bas-relief, grotesque sculptures in half-hidden niches, and more than 1,000 gargoyles staring down from eave and parapet, transept and sepulchre, peering down through wood rafters in the great halls and positioned so as to peer in the blood-tinted windows of the northeast face, their winged and hunchbacked shadows moving like grim sundial hours, cast by sunlight in the day and gas-fed torches at night. And everywhere in Kronos Keep, signs of the Shrike Church's long occupation, atonement altars draped in red velvet, hanging and freestanding sculptures of the Avatar with polychrome steel for blades and blood gems for eyes, more statues of the Shrike carved from the stone of narrow stairways and dark halls so that nowhere in the night would one be free of the fear of touching hands emerging from rock. The sharp curve of blade descending from stone, four arms enveloping in a final embrace. As if in a last measure of ornamentation, a filigree of blood in many of the once occupied halls and rooms, arabesques of red spattered in almost recognizable patterns along walls and tunnel ceilings, bedclothes caked hard with rust-red substance, and a central dining hall filled with the stench of food rotting from a meal abandoned weeks earlier, the floor and table, chairs and wall adorned with blood, stained clothing and shredded robes lying in mute heaps. And everywhere, the sound of flies.
"Jolly fucking place, isn't it?"
said Martin Silenus, his voice echoing. Father Hoyt took several steps deeper into the great hall. Afternoon light from the west-facing skylight 40 meters above fell in dusty columns. "It's incredible," he whispered. "St. Peter's in the New Vatican is nothing like this." Martin Silenus laughed. Thick light outlined his cheekbones and satyr's brows.
"This was built for a living deity," he said.
Fedmon Cassad lowered his travel bag to the floor and cleared his throat.
"Surely this place predates the Shrike Church."
"It does," said the consul. "But they've occupied it for the past 2 centuries.
It doesn't look too occupied now,
said Braun Lamia. She held her father's automatic in her left hand. They had all shouted during their first 20 minutes in the keep, but the dying echoes, silences, and buzz of flies in the dining hall had reduced them to silence.
Sad King Billy's androids and Bond clones built the goddamn thing,
said the poet.
8 local years of labor before the spin ships arrived. It was supposed to be the greatest tourist resort in the web, a jumping-off point for the Time Tombs and the City of Poets. But I suspect that even then the poor schmuck android laborers knew the locals' version of the Shrike story.
Saul Weintraub stood near an eastern window, holding his daughter up so that the soft light fell across her cheek and curled fist.
All that matters little now. Let's find a corner free of carnage where we can sleep and eat our evening meal.
Are we going on tonight?
To the tombs?
Asked Silenus, showing real surprise for the first time on the voyage.
You'd go to the Shrike in the dark?
Lamia shrugged.
What difference does it make?
The consul stood near a leaded glass door leading to a stone balcony and closed his eyes. His body still lurched and balanced to the movement of the tramcar. The night and day of travel above the peaks had blurred together in his mind, lost in the fatigue of almost 3 days without sleep and his rising tension. He opened his eyes before he dozed off standing up.
We're tired. We'll stay here tonight and go down in the morning.
Father Hoyt had gone out onto the narrow ledge of balcony. He leaned on a railing of jagged stone.
Can we see the tombs from here?
No,
said Silenus.
They're beyond that rise of hills. But see those white things to the north and west a bit? Those things gleaming like shards of broken teeth in the sand?
Yes.
That's the City of Poets. King Billy's original site for Keats, and for all things bright and beautiful. The locals say that it's haunted now by headless ghosts.
Are you one of them?
Asked Lamia. Martin Silenus turned to say something, looked a moment at the pistol still in her hand, shook his head, and turned away. Footsteps echoed from an unseen curve of staircase, and Colonel Cassad re-entered the room.
There are 2 small storerooms above the dining hall. They have a section of balcony outside, but no other access than this stairway. Easy to defend. The rooms are clean.
Silenus laughed.
Does that mean nothing can get at us, or that when something does get at us, we'll have no way to get out?
Where would we go?
Asked Saul Weintraub.
Where indeed?
Said the consul. He was very tired. He lifted his gear and took one handle of the heavy Mobius cube, waiting for Father Hoyt to lift the other end.
Let's do what Cassad says. Find a space to spend the night. Let's at least get out of this room. It stinks of death.